Welcome to episode 428 of the Pop Culture Roundtable, the podcast whose other host is somewhere in the upstate New York wilderness. In this episode, we talk about the Disney Dish podcast, Sorted Food, and Suicide Squad. I'm Patrick Hill.
I'm Lauren Rubin.
And I'm not Patrick Hill.
So in the meantime, grab your favorite shark friend and hope they don't eat you.
Aw, he's hungry.
We like to kick off every episode by going around the table, which is when we talk about something new, fun, and noteworthy from our weeks. I've just realized in doing this that Andrew says that very quickly. I'm trying to match his like cadence in that with those phrases and those words.
Yeah.
It's tough. That's like doing the hurdles. That's like the 100-meter hurdles.
It does sound exactly like my memory, so you're nailing it.
Oh, I think if I overlaid them, they would fit perfectly, but it was terrifying to do that just now. Like, gosh.
I mean, I usually set you guys at 1.5 speed, so, you know, you're way slower than he is.
I bet. What I can tell is that if you trip on one word, you're going to trip over several. I used to think Andrew was just an idiot. Like, I used to think that, like...
Used to?
Maybe he didn't understand he was saying the wrong words, or maybe he just, like... Maybe he thought in his head he was salvaging it, kind of like the Michael Scott, like when he's like giving his reasoning, you know, to David Wallace. No, I've realized that it's fast enough that if you catch one with your toe, you're going to then catch like the next one with your knee and the next one with your chest. Like you just can't stop. It's like over at that point. So
dominoes.
Okay, this episode's already a bit different. You'll notice, oddly, there were two of me in the intro. But it's not a second of me. That's actually our guest. We talked about this last week, but we're doing this a series of patron-hosted episodes while Andrew is off doing his big hike that he's doing. And we are going to give updates on that at the end of every episode. But for right now, let's welcome Mr. Patrick, however you say his last name, a.k.a. Jedi Robbies, to the show.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Patrick, how do you say your last name?
Arajanian, but, you know, you guys can keep calling me Prisoner of Azkaban or whatever it is you guys say.
Not going to get that, so, yeah. You've heard it here. We have permission.
Became Patrick Jedi, for real. So,
well, let's...
I mean, whatever's easier, to be honest. It's a complicated last name for some people, so...
I mean, to be honest, I'll probably just call you Patrick because it's weird to call people by their first and last names normally.
Yeah.
Patrick A. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
Well, that's easier. Yeah.
So on that note,
I was Lauren R for most of my life, so I understand.
So Lauren, why don't you tell us more about your life? Specifically what you've done this last week.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, Jedi is actually tied in with something that I did this week. So Crazy for Cult happened this week and Jedi actually got to go. I am so jealous.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'll tell you maybe how I felt and then you can tell me how it was to actually be there.
It
was
sure.
Really awesome to get to do the show. It was really, your pictures were the first ones I got to see online of like everything. So that was like so cool to like get to like look at on the night of. I did not think of this idea in like a timely manner, but we had like a little Zoom meeting with the handful of us are in the like M of One group. Oh, yeah.
He's flashing
he's
a pin right
now. He's got one of my
pins
already. Yeah. You're one of the like very first people to have one. So we got together on Zoom during the kind of opening and we're trying to like find what we could find online and everything and waiting for pictures. And it was really fun. So me and Kate Carlton mainly were on there. Art by Colin popped in. So hopefully next time we'll be a little more organized and we can have more people. But it was fun to just like get together and celebrate a little bit because like this felt like a really big milestone for all of us.
There were a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I tried. I toyed with the idea of live streaming it, but knowing Gallery 1988, and you know, I've gone there for many show openings.
Nice.
Knowing them, I've usually had really poor reception. So as a result, I kind of waited to leave, and that's why it took me so long to upload the pictures. Is I had to get home first and then upload those photos. It always feels really awkward when you go over there and you're just taking a bunch of photos of other people's art because, you know, you're not always sure how cool with everybody it is. I mean, usually Gallery 1988 is fine with it. Like, yeah. You'll go in and I always end up buying like two or three things anyway.
Yeah, at least like as an artist, I feel like it's a lot less weird at a gallery show when people take pictures of your work. Sometimes at cons, I'm like, why are you just taking pictures of my posters? But a lot of times people ask and they're like, oh, I wanted to send it to my cousin because he loves Star Wars, but I want to check that they want it first. And then I'm usually like, that's a good reason. So we usually just ask.
That's a no-no? You're not supposed to do that?
Without asking?
I take pictures all the time. Like if I see something I like, I just take a picture. I mean, it's not like I'm going to go print it and frame it. I just take a picture because I want to share it with someone or something.
Okay, here's the thing. Sometimes people are quick and just snap one and I don't notice. Other people like take their time and are like up in my booth and taking up space for other people and don't even look at me and do that. And that's what I find annoying.
Oh, I just do like that's it. That's the motion.
Yeah, no, that's
like flip up hit. That's all that happens.
That's fine. I just don't, like if you're going to like be there for a minute and like trying to take a picture, it's usually a little weird.
I guess it would be a bad sign if they were like trying to perfectly square it up and make sure it's like, yeah, they have like a rig that they set up so they can perfectly capture it like fully square. Like that would be a no-no.
I mean, exactly. In this case, I tried to get as good as pictures as I could, you know.
No, but like, it's really not weird at gallery shows because the whole thing is like meant to be shown and like, who knows, you could have been from like any publication and taking pictures for it, you know.
Right. And, you know, so many of you guys were in this show. Mm-hmm. I just want to, like, kind of throw out, like, so Mark Morris or M Squared, he was, he did the Drive poster. Kate Carlton.
And he sold out.
Yeah, he did.
Nice.
So congrats, Mark. Yeah. I'm sure you're listening to this. Maybe not. I hope so. I don't know.
We congratulated him on Slack, at least.
Yeah. Kate Carlton did the Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yes.
Who else? Colin Schlicht or Art by Colin. He mm-hmm. did the Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
I thought that was really good.
Is really good. I love them all, actually. But Into the Spider-Verse is just one of my favorite movies, so I'm biased.
Yeah, if you've seen his other art, it's very much in the style of his other art, but it kind of really works with Into the Spider-Verse as well. So mm-hmm. it kind of looked glitchy, and at the same time, you know, kind of did that gradient polygon kind of style that he tends to do with his art. So I thought it was really cool.
I was going to say a cool thing that Colin shared with all of us that is like a secret about his piece that I didn't notice the right way is that like the way that the spider people are all arranged makes a spider like together. It looks really cool. If you can,
oh, my
like,
God.
Once you look at it, like it's really obvious, but like I really didn't see it right on my own.
I mean, just thinking about it, I can.
And like
place that image
spider
in my head.
Ham
yeah.
is like the little pinchers in the bottom. It's really perfect. So, Colin, I hope you don't care that I shared your secrets, but they're awesome.
No, I'm sure he'd be thrilled with that. Yeah. That's
and
really
I've
cool.
got
That's
the
nice
AI file he used to make it, so I'll share that.
Whoa! He told us there's like over 1,000 layers in it, also, which blows my mind.
Well, he's probably bad at organizing files.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Sean Lynn Panchezin. She did. What was The Devil Wears Prada?
Yep.
Yes.
And Mark Morris actually printed that for her. So that's a kind of like cool little yeah. Matt Luxick or Matt Can Draw. He did mm-hmm. that Snoopy print with
yes.
Snoopy
it's
and
like
Charlie Brown. That was
super good. And that pin
yeah.
is super.
And
good
he had
as well.
The little pins too.
Yeah, really he had the little pins. Those are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then you did those Jurassic Park pins, and I'll let you talk about that.
Yeah.
But a couple of people that I also follow on Instagram, Jared Circus Bear did mm-hmm. one of his 3D things. And then Ian Glaubinger, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right,
yep.
but
it's close enough.
He did Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and that was pretty cool.
Both
well,
people but, I think we've had on the show, although if we had Circus Bear on the show, it was a week I wasn't here. Maybe we haven't had him.
You're like, I wish I'd met
no,
him.
No, I think we have. But now
I've heard him on a podcast.
I think he was on the art department. See, this is why I shouldn't bring this stuff up when Andrew's not here, because I actually don't know. I don't remember 50% of what we do, so at this point, I need to stop. I don't even know who he is. Glaubinger.
Really?
Glaubinger is the correct pronunciation. Lauren, continue. No, I'm just kidding. I know who he is, but I don't know information. I've got to go look up if we actually had him on. So I'm gonna go check.
I just remembered what he did, by the way. He did Barf from Spaceballs.
Yeah, I saw that one. That one was great. Yeah. There's a lot of really good ones. I can't remember who did it. I can probably look it up while we're talking, but there's like a mummy one of kind of like,
the weapons.
Yeah, like the objects that are like cursed and stuff from the mummy. And I think that one's really good. I like it too because it's like not very obvious what it is. You kind of have to know the movie to notice what it is. Otherwise, people probably just think you have like generic Egyptian art in your house.
Yeah.
So I thought.
Well, I want to point out that we had Jared Circus Bear on the podcast back on December 28th of 2017.
I probably listened to that one.
Yeah, episode 104.2. All right, sorry, continue, Lauren.
No, that's okay. There's like a lot of great pieces. I totally recommend going to Gallery 1988 and checking out everything that they have online. There's still lots of stuff that you can get. Definitely all my pins are still there. Hopefully I will have some to sell after the fact, but I love my little Jurassic Park dinos. I never see enough dinosaur pins that I really like that aren't like super cutesy, so I wanted some that like made good pins and aren't like, you know, like that super like chibi kind of style or like meant to be really just straight up cute, where mine are kind of like, I think a little different. Like, I definitely think the like Spitter one is cute because he's kind of fat, but
they're cartoonish is what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the more cartoony, less like cute. Cause I just see so many dinosaur pins that don't look like real dinosaurs or they're just skeletons, I think. So like, I was trying to come up with something like in that vein that would make me happy. And then I ended up doing the like fossil variants. Thank you, Ursa Major Supply, for getting me hooked on making variant pins. But they are, I think they turned out so good. I like them just as much as the regular versions. I can't really like play favorites. I love them all, but very happy with how those came out.
Those are really cool, by the way.
Thank you.
It was a toss up for me whether or not I was going to get the fossilized versions or the color versions. I just ended up going with the color versions because I really liked how you colored them. So
thank you. Coloring pins makes me insane a little bit. So I really appreciate you saying that. It's like the hardest part in the process for me.
Like just,
they're really cool.
Picking correctly?
Yeah, picking the colors. It's so hard because like even with a color book, I'm just like terrified.
You need a friend. You need someone that can like, I mean, I know that you have friends, but you need someone that can like, whatever you do, like put the enamel down and then just send it to you. Like you need actual like enamel swatches, not a color book.
Oh yeah, I would love that because whatever you actually get always is a little different than on screen and versus what you print and everything. So it is difficult to tell what you're going to get. Having the color book helps enormously. Like, so glad that I bought one. But it's still like never exactly what you expect. So it's hard. And they're hand mixing those enamel like colors anyway. So like even though they're trying to match the color you sent them, it might not turn out perfect because there is a human element in the process of that. So it's just what it is. But so happy to be in that show. Thank you, Jedi, for taking all of those pictures. It was awesome. Made us all really happy.
And honestly, so it was the first show that 1988 had since the pandemic happened. And I remember being here, and I was actually going to go pick something up from 1988 right before all those riots happened. And they were right next to Gallery 1988. It was insane. This little Japanese store that I go to every now and then when I visit 1988 was completely trashed during those riots. So I freaked out. But I'm glad they were able to have a show. They definitely had a line out the door for a while because they were only allowing 15 people in at a time.
Yeah.
Did
you feel good like there? Like they felt safe and everything?
Yeah, because you know, usually when you go to those shows, it's packed inside.
Yeah.
And this time it was completely empty because it's only 15 people at a time. But you go outside and the line's down the block.
Wow.
And when we left, there were still people there that were maybe two or three people behind us when we were in line. So I don't know how they managed that line after we left because they were going to close in an hour.
Yeah.
So
1988. Is it about the same size as Mondo's now closed gallery?
I couldn't tell you because I've never been.
Oh. Based on your pictures, I would say, yeah, it looked like around the same size.
It looks pretty similar. It looks like maybe it's like 2 feet narrower, but otherwise it looks pretty similar. Space not being an issue if you check out Hero Complex's gallery because that place is massive.
Well, they just changed their space. I don't know if you guys went to their
new space. I've been to the old space and the new space. The new space has the, it also has the second floor as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went there when they were doing the Muppets Christmas Carol. They did a movie watch, and then they did like the poster unveiling type thing, and we got to go there for that. That's actually the last time that we had a chance to go visit the West Coast. So we made some promises then. Those promises were pre-pandemic, but we're still looking to cash in on those when the world's not on fire.
Yeah, I'm so sad that I missed that screening because that print was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
That Muppets Christmas Carol print was so good. So
it is brilliant.
It's a bummer.
Yeah, I haven't been to either gallery, so I'm hoping that, again, when the world is not on fire, I can go out there. Hopefully when I have stuff in these galleries and I get to see it myself.
Absolutely. All right, who are you tossing to do, Lauren?
I have one more thing I have to bring up before I toss
ahead.
It. For sure. My one pop culture recommendation for this week. A new show on HBO called The White Lotus. I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but I got like completely hooked. A friend recommended it to me last weekend, and I've watched the all the episodes that have come out. The penultimate episode came out on Sunday, so the last one is coming out this Sunday. It's kind of like a Agatha Christie-ish type thing, but kind of meets the vibe of like Righteous Gemstones with maybe a little Napoleon Dynamite thrown in there. It's like very awkward and very like high tension between like all the people at this resort and stuff, but it is so funny. Like, I just love it. Like, they make fun of just absolutely everyone and everything. Like, the social satire involved is just so clever and like just like very biting and great. And it's all like just these people stuck at a resort together. You kind of learn in the very opening of the show, like the first 60 seconds, that these people are leaving the resort. They're at the airport, and you find out that there's been a murder at the White Lotus. And then they kind of cut to all the people arriving, and you sort of meet all the different families and the new guests and the people who work at the hotel, and then the story just goes from there. And it's just like snowballed into this big, beautiful mess, and I cannot wait to see how it all ends. Totally recommend this. 6 episodes, really easy to watch. It's so funny. Very sexual, though, so don't watch it with your parents or anything, but
yes.
It's so funny.
I am now intrigued.
So do you know who wrote that, by the way?
Mike White, who is like the real Ned Schneebly in School of Rock.
Yes, and he was also on Survivor, so if you want to check out Survivor, there's a whole season with him on there as well. He actually does really well on the show, but...
Nice.
And he's...
Was this like before he was an actor?
No, he was on Survivor after he did School of Rock.
I love
everything.
It.
Yeah. It's funny how many people didn't realize who he was. Like, they could kind of place him, but not quite place him. But he was also involved in, like, Nacho Libre and...
Gentleman Bronco is my favorite.
Other stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's been involved in several things.
But it's super funny. I recommend it. If you like Ben Stiller comedies, you'll probably think this is funny.
Interesting.
It kind of makes me... I mean, your description kind of makes me think of Avenue 5, where everybody's like kind of stuck on that ship together. I don't know if you guys watched
that. I did watch that show. That is it. It's definitely like got a whiff of that, but I would say not too much. Just in the fact that there are people stuck together and they're very rich, but like it's much funnier because I did not like Avenue 5 at all.
No,
oh, really?
Avenue 5 I found to be totally unfunny.
Oh my God.
I did not like that show. I wanted to. Like, I liked the cast.
And I ended up watching all of it.
I did too, against my better instincts.
I mean, that whole airlock scene, like, I was dying.
There are parts of it that are funny. I'm not going to lie that, like, I didn't laugh at any of it, but I overall didn't really care for that show. I think White Lotus is absolutely hilarious. So, like, I'm watching it alone and, like, belly laughing. So it's a good sign.
Oh, that's fair.
But that's it for me.
All right, who are you throwing it to?
Which Patrick? Let's go with Patrick number one. We'll save the best for last.
Is that you?
That's going to be you. I'd be in development terms, I would be Patrick Zero, because zero would be the first index. So Patrick One would be you, Mr. Robbies.
Okay. Last week, I went to Crazy for Cult, as Lauren said. We just talked about it, so I probably won't talk about that.
Great.
It's since the pandemic started, my wife and I haven't been able to go to the Hollywood Bowl, and that's been like a summer tradition for us, is we'll go to like a couple of shows at the Hollywood Bowl. Mm-hmm. But finally this year, they reopened and we were able to get tickets to various shows. But last week we went to the Princess Bride. So they were showing Princess Bride, and the LA Philharmonic plays the music. And it's really interesting because when you listen to the score, which was written by Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's just like a lot of cheesy organ music for a lot of it. When you hear it with an actual orchestra, it's really different and really cool.
Yeah.
So that was awesome.
I was thinking any movie that's like played with the live orchestra must be like much more special. Like that seems awesome. I've always wanted to try that.
Oh yeah, we did that. We did that with Jurassic Park. We did that with Nightmare Before Christmas. We did that. And Danny Elfman was there. Like he was singing the parts. Catherine O'Hara was there. They're all singing the parts. So that's the one
that's
nice
awesome
thing about living in LA is you get to go to the Hollywood Bowl and like all these celebrities show up and they'll do their parts in these things.
That's pretty awesome.
But yeah, so Rob Reiner came out and he gave a little spiel about the film before it started. And that was kind of neat. But then after that, I found out that my wife Tara had never seen This is Spinal Tap. So we went home and I made her watch This is Spinal Tap.
She didn't even know why it goes to 11.
Yeah, no, she didn't. But yeah, it was great. And yeah, she enjoyed that.
Is it a great movie? I've only seen Spinal Tap once, and
it's worth a rewatch.
Yeah, I guess that's my question. How well does it hold up?
Pretty good. I mean, if you're into like the whole band thing and metal thing, it's just like 100% that. I mean, so again, living in LA, you hang out with a lot of people in bands, and you kind of see those egos and those kinds of personalities play around and kind of deal with what they're doing. And that film is just spot on. So it's hilarious to me.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So other than that, on Tuesday, we're going to go again to the Hollywood Bowl.
Nice.
We're going to go to see Gustavo Dudamel. I don't know if you guys know. He's like the conductor of the LA Philharmonic. He's going to be doing a bunch of pieces from Gershwin. So, you know, Rhapsody in Blue and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be really fun. Another thing that happened this past weekend was, my wife and I went to, Santa Barbara and we stopped by, the Test Pilot and, the Good Lion, and Test Pilot's actually where we went for, like on our wedding day, we went to a tiki bar called the Test Pilot, and that's
Kind
of where we ended up. Same day, Shag released, his 60th anniversary Tiki Tea piece, which I totally missed out on, but it's really cool. And proceeds go to Tiki Tea, which is one of the oldest tiki bars in existence, but definitely the second oldest in LA.
So
I was going to say, where is it?
Yeah.
So I don't mean this in like any type of sarcastic or whatever way. Help me a bit with the attraction to tiki bars. Like, what is it rooted in, or where does that come from? What drives your interest in that?
Well, for me specifically, it's escapism. So, the first real tiki bar experience I had, and this is going to make me sound like kind of a noob.
Sure.
But the first tiki bar experience I had was like maybe 6 years ago. We went to Trader Sam's. And while I was there, and this, you know, we used to go to Disneyland all the time, and mm-hmm. we hadn't gone to Trader Sam's for like a few years since we had had our annual passes. But we went to Trader Sam's like on a whim, and I just like got hooked that one day, and I felt like we were on vacation while we were there.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Since then, I've slowly started, you know, collecting mugs here and there, a little piece of art here and there, and then now I have a tiki room in our house. So
but <it's-
laughs> you have an epic tiki room in your house. You should not just say it like that. Like, it is insane. It is very awesome.
So for you, it's just the ultimate getaway. Like, if you're surrounded by tiki stuff, there is nothing else in the world in that moment.
Yeah. I mean, I like to, here's the thing. I really enjoy sharing the whole tiki experience with everybody. So when people come to our house, I have stocked more than one bar in our house full of all kinds of alcohol and mixers. I have cocktail books like from various different locations, and I experiment on Saturdays. So we have a diet. We're low carb. On Saturdays, I just go nuts and I just make drinks like all day. and
that sounds
tropical
amazing.
Cocktails. Yeah. Tropical cocktails are totally my thing. So,
okay, wait, what is your like specialty or maybe like your favorite drink right now?
So for my wife, her favorite drink is a Jet Pilot, which is a classic tiki drink, uses anise liquors and various kinds of rum. But for me, I've kind of fallen in love with this drink called the Bamboo Barrel. It's kind of this, it's this red drink with grenadine and also a couple of different kinds of rum. I would 100% recommend trying out either of those drinks. They're both
okay.
They're not super fruity. They're more, they got kind of a spice flavor to them, and they're really good.
Nice. We have a good tiki bar here. I might go see if they have them.
I use running as my big escape, because if I do any running, I become so consumed with the idea of like continuing to live and like breathe and not die. It just pushes everything else out. Like, I can't consider anything else in the world if I'm trying to actively, like, exercise. Like, do aerobic exercise. So, that's mine.
I don't know. I think, like, reading is probably mine. I get, like, really, like, I really focus when I'm reading and, like, sometimes don't hear when people are talking to me and stuff. So, I, like, just get totally sucked in.
Genuinely, though, it would probably be movies, so... all right.
That's probably like more realistic. I mean, I do it more often, at least these days.
Patrick, is that it from your week?
There's a new season of Rocket League starting tomorrow. Sorry, not tomorrow, Wednesday, but I don't know if anybody cares about that. Rocket League. All right.
Nice.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Hey, I talked about magicians like every day for a long time, so
you'll find out how...
we all like what we like.
You'll find out how much we care by whether or not that makes it into the episode. How about that? All right, so I actually have two things real quick. One is really just a point of awful pain I need to share with you. I've been playing Pokemon Go lately, and
does it fill the void of Dr. Mario successfully?
It doesn't. But so I've been doing that lately, and I'm playing with some other people. But when you do raids, you can raid from anywhere. So I've through this app, I've started like raiding with people that are in other parts of the country or other parts of the world, right? And one of the people that I raid with is a person in Japan. And every day we send gifts to each other. So like in the app, you can send a little gift, and like it'll have a picture from like a Pokestop where you got the gift. And then you like put a sticker on it that says hi, and it some stuff comes with it, whatever. So I've been sending gifts back and forth. I haven't been thinking about it. And then I did start thinking about it, because recently I went to Fredericksburg, Texas, and there is the National Museum of the Pacific War, and there's a bunch of Pokestops around. So I was spinning Pokestops, you know, getting gifts, whatever. Well, this museum is ultimately about our conflict with Japan and dropping bombs on them, and I've been sending him gifts that have like pictures from the war museum of like bombs. And like,
oh my God,
cruisers and like memorial things. And I don't know if this is a hate crime. I don't know. It's not intentional, but there's some Japanese guy that me and him are playing Pokemon Go, and I look like the biggest racist ever, just sending him like how much American war propaganda about when we drop bombs on you, can I get in front of you? And I every day I've been sending him another one. I stopped now. Like, now that I've realized what I'm doing, I quit. But I mean, he got four or five before that happened. And I was trying to.
Do you always look at the pictures, or is that like something you have to like click through?
So here's what's
funny.
You
know what I
mean? Whenever I go to church, there's a Pokestop outside. So a lot of my gifts have a church on it. And sometimes when I'm sending people gifts, I don't want them just keep getting like gifts from the same, like with a church on the front of it. I don't know. So I like to mix it up. So I save the church ones for like Mackenzie and Andrew. And then all the ones that have like unique imagery, when I actually go visit places, those are the ones I send to
that is
to
hilarious
guests, right? So it's as though he was a guest in my home and I was trying to give him my best, but what I ended up doing is being an absolute racist a-hole. So there you go. So be careful when you send gifts on Pokemon
Go. Is this person
Go.
Still your like Pokemon friend, or is he like stop sending you gifts?
I'm going to be honest, he hasn't sent me gifts in 2 days. But I'm going to keep sending him gifts, and if he keeps opening them, I'll keep sending them. That's all I can do.
Able to send him an apology?
No.
Can you send him a gift that says Gomenosai? Just written on there.
I can't. I have no control unless I write an apology get it registered as a Pokestop and then collect gifts from it. That's the only way I can send him something. And that's a process. Like, I don't know that I have the
will.
Well,
I mean, that would
that.
Definitely be an adequate apology.
Yeah, but it would take too long.
I'm just joking.
The other thing, and I'm sharing this specifically for you, Lauren, Rob and Ramesh are mm-hmm. two. So I watch a lot of British panel shows. We've talked about this.
I was crying laughing watching this, Patrick.
Did I send it to you already?
Yes.
Great. I forgot that I sent it to you. Listen.
You haven't talked about it on the podcast, but you texted it to me and Andrew like a week ago.
Okay. I'm sending you a new one. So Robin Ramesh, I sent you the
Olympics
Great
one.
Britain Olympics one. So yes. Robin Ramesh, they are two comedians. They show up on a lot of these like British panel shows. They're in seasons of Taskmaster and they do Countdown and like all that kind of stuff. Whatever. I mean, I'm sure they're funny
Rob
people.
Was
they have stand-up
Celebrity
specials.
Bake Off.
Great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yes, he was. I forgot he was. He was. So they have this show called Robin Ramesh Versus, and it's them versus something. So it could be like an athlete or like one is versus fashion. The one I sent to y'all was Robin Ramesh versus like Team Great Britain. And so they were trying to find Olympic sports they could be Olympians at.
It was hilarious. It's just basically comedians doing Olympic tasks, which is a great idea, and the regular Olympics should copy that next year.
Yeah,
like, everyone should do that.
I honestly almost panicked at one moment because I was laughing so hard I thought I would run out of air, and I could not stop laughing.
Was it the gymnastics one?
Yes, internally, specifically when he's getting ready to do like the pommel horse or whatever, and he's like doing like the mushroom bucket.
The bucket.
I lost. Okay, but we'll share that video so you can watch it because us talking about it's not nearly as funny. But I just sent you another one. They have Robin Ramesh versus drag, where they go.
Oh, this popped up.
They go meet with, I think it's like a winner and a runner up from Drag Race. And
is it the Vivian?
And they
UK Drag Race.
Yeah, and they get completely made over and have to perform a drag show.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
It's incredible. So I've just sent
you
that
I'm definitely
one.
Watching that. Tonight.
I would 100% watch that.
Yes, I'll drop it into hashtag reality TV, by the way, which everybody can join. But it's incredible. You need to watch it. Mackenzie and I already watched it. Hilarious. But they have a bunch on there. So Robin Ramesh, very, very funny. I keep watching that as well. So, okay, that is going to do it for Around the Table. I want to get into our master categories so we can talk Lauren's category. So with that, master categories. The master categories are the part of the show where we talk about the dice that we rolled from the week before. I almost said tokens, which Andrew does as well. We haven't had tokens in years, and yet it's still somewhere in my brain kicking about that we have tokens. So I'm going to go ahead actually and kick this off because I'm blowing through this category. I'm trying to get to Suicide Squad. I can't wait, but I figure we'll round the bases with that at the end. So I got food for this week. And for food, I'm actually talking a food content creator. That's probably a good way to put it. Content creator that I love and have been very into. And this kind of falls in my British theme, by the way, because I just talked about Robin Ramesh. I guess I had a Japanese thing first. I talked about Robin Ramesh, and now I'm continuing that with a British content creation team, which is Sorted Food. Now, Sorted Food is a group of friends. It's kind of like half actually trained professionals and half what they would just call like normals or it's just regular people.
Muggles.
And muggles. And initially this started as a way of saying like, hey, you don't have to eat pre-made food all the time. Here's some really simple recipes you can make. And in fact, that would carry along into their cookbooks they have, which is Can't Be Arsed. It would be one of their cookbooks. But it started with creating this recipes. It's continued to grow, and now it's this full-blown channel. They have a couple million subscribers. They have hundreds of millions of views across their content. They have an app. They have like a monthly subscription that gives you recipes and access to books and podcasts. And there's 16 employees now that work creating this content, and it's all around food. What's nice is that it's an incredibly friendly community and group of people. So there's no pretentiousness, even though you are dealing with, I believe it's two of the hosts are actually trained chefs. There's no pretension, and especially when they have the viewpoint of the average person can make something easily and doesn't need to resort to pre-made food. Like, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
But it's not just stuck there. So, like, if you're into something like, and stuck's going to sound like a negative word. If you watch, for instance, Babish, right, Binging with Babish, then that's all, like, a certain type of content, right? And then if you watch on the other side of the food spectrum might be something like Hot Ones. Like, it still deals with food, but, like, that's a, it's like game show. It's a completely different type of thing, but it's always that. Sorted runs that spectrum on both sides. So they have the, you know, we're going to eat, one of the series I've been watching lately that they do, because they just released a new one this week. They basically, whether it's hot, sour, salty, whatever, they have a series of foods that they have to eat, and they have to, whoever can hold the best poker face while eating them. And it's like increasingly, like, it'd be like if it's hot, they're going to eat like Pepper X, which is hotter than a California Reaper, and they have to, like,
oh my God,
like, ugh, not break their stare. You know, it's like that type of stuff. So they have 100%
that. 100% reminds me of the time you ate the Reaper.
It's not good. Yeah. I don't like to be reminded of it. And
Patrick
then,
does indeed fear the Reaper.
Well, and then you have from that to you have gadget reviews to you have like historical gadget reviews to then you have actual cooking segments that actually teach you how to make stuff. And then they do something similar you've seen on Bon Appetit when that was still a thing. Bon Appetit. But good job ruining that, everybody. But where you have like the pro chef versus normal chef, and they have to make the same thing, you know, like,
oh, that's
so they
funny,
have a
yeah.
lot of those formats that you've seen, but they have them all in one place. It's a very compelling, friendly group of people. And the thing is, this is not a group of people that just said, we're going to copy what other people are doing. They've been doing this for like 12 years now. They're not new to the scene. They've been honing their craft. They've been building an audience. And I've been very, very impressed by their content. There's, you know, there's not a lot of shows that transition well. If I'm thinking YouTube shows, there's not a lot of shows that would transition well into like an experience you would want to have on your TV. And you might think you do, but I'm telling you, like, it's a big jump, okay? Sorted Food, I feel like, is right there at the cusp of, oh, I would actually navigate to them on my TV and I would sit there and watch that with like my family at night. Like, that's the,
yeah,
that's the level of entertainment that I think they bring. So, anyway, that's Sorted Food. I would say start on YouTube. Again, they have all the mm-hmm. podcasts and the website and the recipes and all that stuff. Just go to their videos, sort by top videos. Start watching. You'll find some good stuff. So, yeah, Lauren.
Have you tried any of their recipes?
I'm lazy. I can't be arsed.
They said that they're easy.
I don't care. I don't trust them. They're British. That's not true. I do trust them. I actually
have you tried to make a jet pilot yet?
No, but that sounds much better.
Yeah.
That sounds like
probably
something
easier
I would
to make
have.
Than a lot of food.
Easier to make, but you have to have all the ingredients, which...
Well, sometimes yeah. I was going to say, I do remember with all our Great British bake-offs, like measuring in British style and getting all the ingredients sometimes is challenging because they're called different things than we call them, or there's things like double cream, which they don't sell in the United States. So there's all kinds of fun things you can learn.
Hey, yep. True bangers can't get true bangers unless you got a butcher that's going to make them for you. But like, that's true.
Yeah.
It's hard to find some of that stuff. So anyway, Sorted Food, super good. Definitely check them out if you're looking for some food entertainment. But
I will check that out.
Patrick, you're next. What did you get this week?
So I got podcasts and I also ruled a four. So I guess from any time.
That's right.
So before I get into my main topic, which is Disney Dish, I just want to talk about just podcasts in general and how it's kind of changed for me over time. But basically, when I started listening to you guys, the Master of One podcast, you guys were audio only. Then you guys jumped to YouTube.
Yes.
I really enjoyed the video format. I thought the video format was awesome. But I listened way less because I usually listened to you guys while I was working in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you guys went back to audio format, popped back on. Jumped to COVID, and on my normal drive to work, I would listen to podcasts, but now I don't.
Yes, you so, and a lot of people.
Yeah. But apparently, podcast listening has gone up, and it makes a lot of sense because a lot of people are working from home now. So... that's one part. So the way I now listen to podcasts is during my workouts, not during work, because now my work involves a lot of brain work and I can't, you know, work and listen at the same time. But so there's that aspect. Another thing that I noticed is that, like me, 19% of people fast forward, or don't fast forward, but they listen to their audio at 1.5 or double speed.
You said that and I was like, what? I've never done that.
Yeah. Did you know it was a possibility?
Yeah, I did, but like, okay. I just can't do it.
So that being said, because I listen to you guys and to other podcasts during workouts, I kind of time it so that I have it at the right rate of speed so that it plays for like an hour. And so for this show, for this show, because the Patreon episodes tend to last a lot longer, I will play at 1.5 or 2x speed. And sometimes it's really hard to listen, but I'll do it anyway. So that it's
I'm like dying to like listen to our own episodes now at double speed.
Yeah. Is it interesting for you to know that I'm not a chipmunk? Is that surprising to find out?
Your voice sounds a lot deeper and slower, and I can't place it. I don't know why. So maybe we should all just talk really fast so that if anybody's listening at a faster rate, then it's really hard to listen. But anyway, so that being said, let's move on to my actual topic, which is going to be the Disney Dish podcast or the Disney Dish podcast network. So nice. I know a lot of you guys really like the Disney parks and Disney in general. And what the Disney Dish podcast is a podcast run by Jim Hill, who is an entertainment writer who has been working with Disney for a very long time, and Len Testa, who runs a website called Touring Plans. His whole background is in like statistics. So Touring Plans basically is what it sounds like. They tell you the optimal way to do what you want at various things like Disneyland or
the Genie.
You know, Vegas or what have you. Exactly. But tailored to you specifically from a person. Anyway, so they have a podcast. And what's really cool about this podcast is Jim, who has no relation to Patrick Hill, Jim has an encyclopedic knowledge of Disney in general. And they will talk about the makings of various rides in the parks. They'll talk about rides or entire theme parks that have never been made, but were part of the planning process. And the one thing that they'll keep on saying is no, you know, good idea ever gets thrown away. It's always, if it's shelved, it's something they can always draw back to.
Yeah.
And they often will have like really great guests on that talk about, you know, various aspects of these things. One really cool thing they did recently was they went back and they went to the archives of Joseph Mankiewicz, who was an Academy Award winning director. Mm-hmm. Disney had actually initially hired him to basically write the story of Epcot and to, you know, get the different lands and all that set up. So he went and he did all that business. But one of the really cool things that they found was his script for The American Adventure that was written in 1978. And what they did was they pulled that out and they reenacted the entire thing with audio and everything. So it sounds like there's an audience there with you and you're actually listening to this original version of The American Adventure. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah. So that's their main podcast. But Jim goes on and he does like various other podcasts within this network. One of which is Marvel Us Disney, where they'll talk about the Marvel aspects of Disney. One of them is called Fine Tuning, which is not specifically Disney, but talks about animation in general. And they'll go through the history of various different animators and animation studios. And that's really cool. So
yeah.
I think in general, this is a really interesting part of podcasting that I'm sure, you know, various other people have touched upon, but I feel like Jim comes from a very, very select number of people who have this kind of knowledge and can, you know, explore the breadth of the background of all of this stuff. So I highly recommend going into those.
Is there like one of those that you like recommend to start with?
I mean, they have a lot. I would start with, I mean, the one, I don't know why, but one of the ones that really like sticks in my mind is like the history of Test Track. And there's like a 3-episode series of Test Track. And that, I thought that was really cool. And they'll go into like all the different sponsors that they had, they rolled through in order to get Test Track going. And honestly,
I'm sure that is very interesting because having worked for a sports team, we had many ideas for events and mascots and other things that had to change drastically based on the sponsorship. So I'm sure it's way crazy at Disney.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, sponsorship was kind of what got Epcot, you know, off the ground. I mean, there's a whole other thing where they were talking about how Australia was supposed to have its own Disney park. And they were supposed to be around, around the year 2000, Australia was supposed to have its own Disney park. They were going to build a ride that's kind of like Soarin', but, you know, you go over different landmarks in Australia. So they went through the entire script of that as well. So there's a lot of stuff that they dig up through various, like, Imagineers that have archives that are now open access of, like, ideas that kind of fell by the wayside and Disney may not go back to. Because, you know, what are the odds that Disney's going to build a park in Australia? I mean, now that I say it, they're probably going to do it. But what are the odds?
It's one of the only places not infected with COVID, so maybe they can at least enjoy it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of what I wanted to throw out there. And I, you know, highly recommend you guys go and take a listen. A lot of so they have subscriber exclusive episodes, and some of these history episodes are subscriber exclusive, but other than that, you can just hop onto Bandcamp and find their episodes there.
Do they get deep into like technical execution, like on that side of things as well?
To a certain aspect, yeah, they do. I would say some of the rides they'll definitely go into that. They talk about, it's mostly, you know, the history and the planning of how things happen. They'll talk about like, oh, they set this up this way. You know, they'll set up a berm to cover whatever this is. They do go into the technicals a bit, but I don't think they go too far into the weeds.
Yeah, I still find it fascinating. I mean, it's my personality type versus other people's, but I don't get into, I don't have the nostalgia for it that people have. So I don't get into some of the more, these ephemeral, ethereal, whatever the word is. These like feely bits of shows, I don't do that. But if someone wants to talk to me about how a team of that size with that budget and or whatever constraints they have, timeline that they have, like how what they decide to do, how they solve problems, what they run into, how, like that part I find absolutely fascinating. You know, we got a touch of that in some of the like
Defunctland stuff.
Well, Defunctland does pretty good. They just don't have the production value that you would get from like one of the Disney Plus shows, like
Imagineering,
or one of the Day at Disney or something like that. But even Imagineering is still a little bit light on information.
Well, of course they're gonna fluff it up on that one because it's them, you know, tooting their own horn.
So like, so I'll say this. So when you were talking about technicals, I thought you were talking about like how the ride systems work to like the full extent. No, they'll go into like budgeting and stuff like that. Like this is something this is their thing. So they'll definitely go into like, oh, this was going to be a thing and this is why it didn't happen.
Yeah, I love that.
So that's, yeah. So they'll go into that kind of stuff. And the thing I'll note about both Jim and Len is that they're very no BS. Mm-hmm. They're very straightforward. They're not, you know, on the Disney payroll. So they're very frank about things, and if they see, you know, something happening, they'll explain like, oh, Disney's gonna do X, Y, and Z because, hey, at the very end, you know, there's the safety of their product and then there's the bottom line and all of the above.
How does the Disney community, how does the community feel about that? I mean, you recently got kicked out of a Disney forum.
Hey, I got kicked out of a Disney forum for being honest about Disney, and you know what, so I'm just going to put this out there because full disclosure, I am a big Disney fan.
Yes.
I love going to the parks. I enjoy Disneyland. I am all about.
I've been in a park history with you. I am familiar with how much you love the parks.
I love the parks. I love the history. I'm all about that business. That being said, there is a level of Disney fandom that is less appreciation of the history and more like throw all your money in this direction and go broke to the point of like, I love Disney so much. There are a lot of fans that are like that. And, you know, I have now alienated a bunch of listeners to this podcast, but
it's fine though.
There are
no, like we said before, everybody likes what they like.
There are a lot of fans that are just really, really into it, and that's fine. But, you know, when you're that into it. Yeah, exactly. Have a conversation, talk about the pros and cons of things, and be very open and honest. So I like to be very open.
You can have criticisms about things without disliking it. Like those are not the same thing.
Yeah.
Like,
you can in loving something want to make it better. You know, it's like we had that very small patriotism conversation that I don't even know if it was in the main episode. It might have just been on the Patreon patriotism. But
yeah,
this idea that people take it to criticize is to be anti, when criticism can actually be like, you care so much, you wanted to see it fully be the thing it could be, you know? So
exactly.
It's different. No, I totally get it, man. It's funny because I imagine it's the same group of people that would celebrate a show like this, even though it sounds like this show is going to call things for what they are.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, you know, like, I will call things for what they are. It's just like, you know, I don't like to get into politics, but, you know, I also realize that science in general is split on a political spectrum right now. And I'm, you know, you guys know I'm a geneticist. So
Patrick just said the word politics, and then he said, I don't like to get into it, but, and that's when I realized we got to steer the conversation away because it's about to get serious.
No, that's where I'm ending it. I'm just ending it as I'm a scientist, and like I follow the science, and that's it. That's what I'm gonna do.
It's fair.
Listen, that's good.
What was the name of that podcast again?
It's called the Disney Dish Podcast.
But that's
I
like the main
one. Check it out.
It's the Disney Dish Podcast like network.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or the Jim Hill Media Network. But yeah, so 100%. If you guys like Disney history, they are all up in that business. They talk to various, I mean, I think Josh Gad had like dropped by for one of the episodes of the fine-tuning show. So yeah, 100%. Check it out.
That's very kind of him.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right. That leaves you, Lauren. We have one more category. What are you talking about this week?
I'm talking about film, and I rolled a 4, so I can talk about any film I want, basically, and I'm going to talk about the latest film, The Suicide Squad.
It doesn't matter what you rolled. You were going to talk about Suicide Squad, and that's fine. I respect it. If you rolled past,
you mean what
said,
number I rolled?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have done the old Suicide Squad.
It's about comics that came out in the past, and it's the new Suicide Squad. All right, tell us about it.
If it was future, it'll be about the inevitable sequel.
Yeah.
But no, yes, Suicide Squad came out this weekend. I was lucky enough to roll something that worked without me needing to stretch the truth.
Perfect.
And I get to talk about it. So I think this movie is so much fun. It is like riding a roller coaster. There's some ups, there's some downs. It's really, really exciting. And you just leave with a big smile on your face.
Yeah. So, okay. Give people like, so this is a question I got. I got this question today from someone, which is, why is there another Suicide Squad? Is this like... So explain this to us, Lauren.
I will do my best to explain this. Because there's a bunch of like complicated nonsense reasons. But the truth is, basically, the first Suicide Squad movie was kind of a dud. It has a lot of like pieces that are very fun. But I don't think that movie is very successful. And I think critics and most people would probably agree. Even though it's still one of the better DC movies. But anyway, not a lot of people are fans. James Gunn, after he was fired from Guardians of the Galaxy, was kind of given his choice of what he wanted to pick from in the DC toy box, and he picked Suicide Squad. So they're like, well, it's not exactly a sequel. It's not exactly a reboot, because there are then characters or actors who play the same characters and reappear in this movie. So it's more a sequel than it is a reboot. But it also just sort of ignores a lot of the first movie conveniently and like re-explains anything that happened in the first movie that is at all relevant to this version very, very quickly. But and it's almost the exact same story. It's just a bunch of convicts are hired by the U.S. government to do insane missions. in order to lessen their prison sentence. Same deal. So there's even like stuff where they sort of replace Will Smith with Idris Elba. And like, I don't know how the characters are actually different other than their names are technically different, but they have the exact same backstory. Like they have the exact same type of character.
Totes different.
They're so different.
Yeah, I mean, they are really good in this film at saying like Suicide Squad can be any group of people. And we're going to show you that it can be any group of people. So from that standpoint, it doesn't have to be a reboot.
As long as you were a villain at some point, basically you're qualified.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a reboot, but it's. I think it is.
Yeah, there was a genius move for DC to get through and pick up James Gunn right after all that business because he totally killed it in this.
Well, I mean, this you one of two ways, right? Because they easily could have. The whole situation's crazy. Like, come on, like. James Gunn.
I hate that happened.
Said terrible things, but they're like 12-year-old tweets. Everybody,
which he's already apologized for before he got called out on.
Yeah,
it
so
even.
They could
so
have easily
like...
gone the safe, quote unquote, route of condemn him like everybody else. And yeah, I'm glad that they didn't do that. And then since James Gunn got rehired to work on Guardians 3, and so the mouse brought him back. So good on DC for getting a piece of him while he was separated.
Yeah, and James Gunn was the perfect person to do this movie. He knows how to, like, take the superhero toy box and just have a really good time. Like, he takes whatever toys he wants, combines them together, doesn't matter if it makes sense, and he just doesn't, like, do the thing that Zack Snyder does where, like, the superheroes are on this, like, untarnished pedestal and you can never say anything bad about them or have them make jokes or crack a fart or, like, anything that makes them feel like real people. So I love that, like... This movie is just like a bunch of weirdos, bunch of jerks that kind of suck. And like, they just have to find a way to pull off being superheroes for a day. It does feel a lot like Guardians of the Galaxy. Like there's no denying it. There's even like, you know, a cute CG giant creature with a little rat friend. So it's like kind of crazy to me, some of the parallels, but knowing that we will not get Guardians for another 2 years, at least, like I'm okay with Guardians Light. For now.
I didn't realize that Ratcatcher was CG. Just kidding. By the way, the person that plays Ratcatcher, who you're introduced to, this was her first English-speaking role.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I like her.
I did not know that.
So it's a similar thing, and we've seen Marvel do the same thing of pulling these unknowns seemingly out of thin air, and then they go on to become these like A-list superstars, or at least within this world, these A-list superstars. And that's what happened in this case, I would say, with the actress who plays Ratcatcher, Daniela. I don't know if it's Melchior or Melchior or however you pronounce the last bit. She's Portuguese. I don't know exactly how you pronounce Portuguese names, but that's fine. But the point is, this is her first like English speaking role, and she was brilliant in the film. She was awesome.
Yeah, she's really like the heart of the movie too. So that's pretty awesome, and carrying that weight amongst some really big actors who are I would be intimidated
like an Idris Elba.
That was the one I was thinking of.
I love that they cast Sylvester Stallone as Killer Shark, and apparently James Gunn
didn't
know
that until the very end. I had no idea
he had written the part. For Stallone, it's ridiculous because he's got Stallone as Killer Shark and he's got Vin Diesel as Groot. Like, this is what he does. He gets like a huge action star and he has them play like this random CG, like not a random CG character, but they play a CG character where they're either dumb or they don't have like any like major lines. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, like, I love King Shark. I think he's like adorable, but I wish he was scarier, to be honest, like especially given other depictions I've seen of him, he actually is threatening. So I'm like, oh, the dumb baby version is cute, and I love how chubby he is. I want to give him a hug, but he's not very scary.
So do you think James Gunn is just only casting from people that have appeared in the Expendables 1, 2, or 3?
I mean, and then the Ratcatcher girl.
Just kidding. So, you know, what's interesting, and I've heard a couple people say this, so this film is it's intense. You know, like I knew that it was going to be gory isn't the word. I knew that there was going to be a lot more there. It's obviously got the R rating.
It's
I know
violent.
It's going to be over the top. But I would explain it. If anybody has seen like a trauma film, like a Toxic Avenger or something, it's kind of like trauma light. Like the yes, this is over the top. I mean, you see someone get sliced in half and you see like every bit of both sides of what's left. I mean, you see some pretty brutal, like
there's a couple times I literally went, ew, gross, more than once. Yeah.
I feel like it's not as bloody as the Deadpool movies were, though.
Right,
it's
but
not as, or Logan, but it feels cartoonish, the violence.
But so did the Deadpool movies. Like, all the Deadpool movies were cartoonish.
It doesn't seem like it's ever trying to get you to wince in this film. Like, it knows it's being over the top and extra, but not again in a way that's trying to necessarily get a rise out of you beyond just, frankly, cracking up at how over the top it is. That's what's going on. So
it just wants to make you laugh. Like, I think that was their like highest objective, was like, let's make these people have a good time.
Hey, it's funny violence.
But especially when you have villains and like you want them to be bad, which I did like that, like the villains felt like villains in this. Like, they don't seem like nice people. Like, I liked that. But yeah, like they do need to kill people. And like the fights were freaking awesome. Like, they are crazy. And they, like, even though they are like cartoon violence, like there's some really creative ways that they kill people.
that boss battle was pretty funny too.
I also think when they're like sneaking into that camp in the jungle, it's really great.
That the ending of that was just, it was so good. It was the best payoff.
Yeah, that was a pantsless man that you saw. I agree. It was amazing. And if you blink, you'll miss it. But see it. So, Lauren, what would you give the film?
Maybe like a 7.5 out of 10. I think it's really fun, but it's still kind of a mess. And it's a lot of style over substance, but I really enjoyed it. And it is definitely, I actually think, the best DC movie, despite some of these criticisms.
Yeah. Patrick, where do you sit on it?
Yeah, I was going to say like a 7.5 or an 8 or something like that.
Yeah, I was like, I might bump to an 8 if I watch it again. You know?
I feel like it was really fun. I feel like I enjoyed the Guardians, at least the first Guardians, more than this film. You know, this might be a toss up with the second Guardians, but definitely. I'd give this like a 7.5.
So what's interesting, I'm surprised that frankly that they're that low. But
what were you gonna say?
What's interesting is that so I think DC has better premises. Like, if you were to give me the 3-sentence pitch for every DC film from the last 4 years, and then you were to give me the 3-sentence pitch for every Marvel film for the last 4 years, I would pick the DC film 9 times out of 10 from premise. Okay.
Interesting.
Now, in execution, it's a pile of garbage. I mean, it is a flaming dumpster of just, okay, that's what they've given us. But I had a lot of faith in James Gunn. James Gunn obviously comes out of a culture that's very successful. And and frankly, the times that we've seen crossover, well, we've seen crossover between Marvel and Sony in this case, but the times we've seen crossover, it seems like it's been fairly successful. So I had expected to enjoy this film. And everybody's been clear from the very beginning about what we were going to get from this film. People were clear that it's going to be R, it's going to be over the top, it's not another Guardians film, like it's going to be kind of crazy, whatever. And then, of course, we've gotten ratings. It's been very high on reviews so far. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, I actually think it fully lived up to what was pitched to me or to us. And I don't know how it could have been much better. I mean, I maybe have two gripes with the film that are both like minutia. And actually, I think the film was more affecting than I expected. Like, the ultimate kind of moral that it drives to, which in the first 30 minutes you would assume there is none. But ultimately where it drives to, I actually found to be fairly affecting. And I walked away really caring about a couple of the characters. Like, for instance, Sebastian. I don't know why I care about Sebastian. About Sebastian. So my point is to say that this is a 9 film for me. It's because it delivered on what it said it was going to do. It met those expectations. It did that stuff very well. And it's a film that I don't think you can do very many times. I think it's a film that you kind of can only do once every few years or once a decade, and then the format is done. And if we get a wave of people trying to mimic it, it's going to be a disaster. You know, I mean, I already feel that a little bit with Guardians. Guardians sticks a little bit better. But still, like, remember how hard Guardians hit? And then everybody went, oh, wait. We can do funny superhero films. Let's do that. And then you get
I think the first Suicide Squad is a perfect example of that. They tried to copy Guardians and make their own version.
Yeah, and it just didn't work. So this is great. I think it's an awesome one-shot. It sounds dumb, but I wouldn't be excited for a sequel necessarily because I don't because I think I just got what I wanted to get from this.
Yeah.
And I don't know that this is something that continues to hold up. But as a one-shot, I found it to be very satisfying, so it's a 9 for me.
I could see them adding this into other films in the DC Extended Universe if they were going to continue that, you know.
Well, they are going to make a TV show with Peacemaker that's coming, so I don't know if that will be more of the vein that they're continuing. But I could see, like, Suicide Squad 2 where they have a new crew, basically. But, like, all the shock of them... A lot of the things that happen. I'm sorry.
You can't get it back.
You would really lose it. Yeah. There's no way to take that back and like get that surprise. Like Game of Thrones was kind of the same way. Like, you know, where it's like, well, now you've done this a lot. Like,
I'm not 100% sure I want that new Game of Thrones show, to be honest. That's just coming from me. But
that's like a whole other can of worms. I could talk for like an hour. I was just going to dodge that bullet for a minute.
It will be interesting to see. So from this point, James Gunn is going to be back on Guardians 3. And
we get the Christmas special first.
There is rumor. I say rumor that there's been some, basically Gunn is not done with DC. He's going to do a lot more with DC. We don't know what that means yet. We don't know what capacity that means. We don't know what kind of oversight that means. The fact is DC has clearly they've had no shortage of budget. They've had no shortage of talent. They've had no shortage of like actors and directors or whatever. There's clearly some link that has been missing. It's like that has caused this. Whoever, maybe it's like that Kevin.
Kevin Feige.
Yeah, maybe it's like that Kevin Feige role has been missing.
I think they don't have an overarching vision. I think that's one of the major things. And then the other thing is for the Justice League film, number one, it was rushed. And then because they didn't have, you know, other films introducing the other heroes like we had with Avengers. And then number two, I think the fact that Zack Snyder like kind of stepped down and Joss Whedon took over and basically Frankenstein the film together in his own, you know, version kind of just ruined the whole thing. You know, people will say what they'll say about the Snyder cut. I thought that it was actually pretty decent. I didn't think it was bad. I watched the whole 4 hours. It took me a while, but
it took me four hours.
Yeah, but you know, it was a lot to sit through. Obviously, but
I think it's.
I mean,
better,
I kind of wanted a little bit more after that, to be honest. I love Marvel, but I'm also a big DC guy. I don't draw a line in the sand there. So if they're gonna make more DC films, I would love for them to kind of jump off of this.
And maybe, so the rumor is that maybe someone like Gunn could come in and be more involved in a bit of that oversight, that control, that larger vision to help bring stuff up to standard. In the same way that you can have a very talented artist, but if they don't have a good creative director over them, they can falter. Like, it's still nice to have someone that can harness your talent. So,
yeah.
It'll be really interesting to see how all of that, like, power dynamic shakes out. And, like, I do think that they probably are. At least should think about like unifying themselves a little more on the DC side of things, like whether or not it's like just James Gunn or maybe like a council of elders or something that need to make these decisions, like it probably would help them a lot. But I would be a little worried if like their entire universe becomes this, because this is a little bit hyperactive for me. Like maybe it was just like expectations that kept this movie from being everything that I wanted it to be. But yeah, because that would be interesting if like James Gunn is directing the next Batman movie. Like, I really have a hard time with that.
The thing I've noticed with Warner Brothers and DC specifically is they'll find something that worked for a film and they'll kind of like try and stick with it.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Marvel's, you know, they have a whole thing in the background And every director brings their own vision to the film while also kind of following what Feige's doing. Like,
yeah.
He says, like, hey, we need this film to do this. You got a start point and an end point. Do what you want to get there, but that's it. And that's the director will take over and they'll have their vision of it. Whereas DC's like, no, we're going to make all the films like this. You know, you got the Chris Nolan films. It's like Batman 1, 2, 3. They're all like dark. They're all in like a normal universe. And it's just like that. And it kind of ends there, you know?
Yeah. And people liked that. So we will do that exactly for everyone, even though all these characters are different and people like them for different reasons.
Exactly. So you get Man of Steel. Yeah.
If they are to create some type of governing council that James Gunn's at the head, can they call it the Big Guns?
Yes, please. I really hope so.
Okay, DCEU and the Big Guns. I'll be looking out for it. So anything else, Lauren?
Nope, I think that's pretty much it. We should have mentioned the soundtrack was great. I guess, like, yeah, James Gunn always kills it with that stuff. And Mondo already has, like, you can order it on vinyl, so we're
ready. There was one miss for me in the soundtrack. I'll tell you when we're off air, but there was one, because I have to explain where it was in the movie. I don't remember the song, so I have to explain the scene, and I won't subject that. But there was one miss in the film. But otherwise, some really good stuff. All right, so let's do this.
Super fun.
That's the end of our
episode. One more thing.
Oh, no, yes?
Oh, I was just going to say, so we're talking about James Gunn. And we're talking about Guardians 3, and I'm going to bring it just really quickly full circle back to the Jim Hill podcast.
Yeah.
And basically what they talk about is, you know, James Gunn needed to come back and he needs to start filming Guardians 3, you know, as soon as he can, because that ride, the Guardians ride at Epcot, is reliant on that film being shot so that they can shoot the scenes for the ride. And so that gets into the nitty-gritty that Patrick, you know, kind of wanted to look at the technical aspects.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's 100% the kind of stuff they talk about.
And I just want Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
I just want to fit on a theme park ride. So we all have things that we want, which is great. All right. So that's it for that. Let's do this, everybody. Let's roll dice real quick. Jedi, I'm actually going to, here's what we're going to do. I'm just making up the rules as we go. We're going to, you're going to roll the dice for next week. So, like, you're going to, and even though it won't be you, you're just going to roll for the next person. And that way, like, we have accountability at how these rolls are going. So, so that said, Lauren, I just rolled a 4 for my big one. Okay. I know that's interesting because it's so small, but I rolled a 4. And then I rolled a 3, which is future.
4 is business.
Business.
Your favorite.
Got it. Future business. Which will be
business
on the moon. All right, Lauren, what do you have?
Let me roll real quick. Ooh, I also got a 4.
We have to re-roll.
No business for you.
All right, so I just rolled again, and I got a 10 this time.
Okay, I got a 4 again, so now I'm stuck with business.
So your business, and I got a 10. What's 10?
10 is TV.
Perfect. That's great. I'm going to watch White Lotus talk about it again. And then, Patrick, what did you roll?
All right, so I did a digital roll on the D20, and I got a 4.
You have to re-roll business.
I'm free! No more business!
All right, so re-roll again.
Re-roll.
This time I got 14, which is art. I love art. Yay.
Oh, you got so lucky.
So lucky.
All right,
it's business time. It's business time.
And Patrick, what do you got?
All right, 19.
All right,
okay, 19. Yay. We're safe. Food.
Our guest is to talk about food. I hope our guest is hungry. Kreider.
Uh-huh. Oh.
All right.
Yeah. Gave it away.
It's just one. It's okay. I can just tease one and just hold the other to my chest. So
just wait till the end of the episode each time and say it then.
Yeah. In honor of Andrew, we had to say his last name incorrectly.
Oh, I need to give an update on where Andrew is. So Andrew has had a slow start. I'm gonna give weekly updates on where Andrew is. Andrew had a slow start. All right. First night, fine. Second morning, broke a toenail. He's had to just stay put all day. So, not going anywhere. He's just taking a 0. It's fine. He's going to have another night, eat through some of his like rations. I don't know that they're rations. It's just food. I think it's just called food. And hopefully we'll have more progress. He just started yesterday. So next week,
like,
I'll have
a... I feel like this is like Andrew's Oregon Trail.
I'll have a week of progress. Tonight I have one day of progress.
Did he take a pack mule or a camel with him?
It's hard.
He's in the full covered wagon.
It's it's hard to source a camel. That's all he said. So I don't know. But next week I'll have more updates on that. So, all right, that's it for this week's episode. You can find show notes online and episode audio, a whole archive with hundreds of episodes at mv1.network. When you're there, you can also find all of our links that'll take you out to like our Slack community. Something like 350 people in our Slack community. Go join it. Join the conversation. Have fun over there with channels all smattered throughout. Lauren is raising her hand as though she wants to say something.
Oh, no, I'm just touching my face.
No, she's
sorry.
Just touching her face. That's something people do to touch their face. That's fine. So you can also go out to our audio channel. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play. You can subscribe, rate, review. Rate and review. Let me say that one more time. Rate and review. That's very, very important. If you leave a review, we'll read it on the show. We'll read it in a fun way, maybe. But that's what you should do. Support us on Patreon. So patreon.com/mofonepodcast. The reason that Patrick is on this show is because we love him. But more importantly,
I willingly gave them money.
He paid for this. He paid for this opportunity by supporting us
more.
On Patreon. So you'll get really great stuff. Most recently, so you get unedited episodes. We should say that. You get the ability, apparently, to host the show over the next 4 weeks. 8 weeks, sorry. And then most recently, we just put out a cool little golden book reading of The Haunted Mansion, which was very, very fun. And then, of course, there's some other exclusive monthly content that comes your way as well. So $2, $4, or $6 a month. Again, that's patreon.com/mv1podcast or go to mv1.network. Click on the little Patreon button and go there. And you'll get cool stuff that way. We have socials. Some of us, I deleted my Instagram this week. So it won't be fully gone until you have to like wait 30-day period, but it's like disabled right now. So my personal Instagram is now officially gone. Just to go, by the way, if you ever want to get all your pictures, you can request them to the Instagram app and they'll email them to you. So they sent me a folder with the pictures I've ever uploaded, which is very, and plus a lot of other creepy data, like how they advertise to me. But so get your content off, delete your Instagram. But for those that haven't deleted it, where can people find you, Lauren?
I'm at Not Cool Co. Instagram, Twitter, all that fun stuff.
And Patrick?
I'm at Jedi Robbies, Jedi R-A-B-I-Z at Instagram.
But it's pronounced raw, as though like it's raw,
like
you
raw
donkey.
Bees.
Yeah. And of course, Master of One, it's everywhere at M of One Podcast, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, hello. That's apparently
Patreon.
People still like bots still follow me. Hello. But yes, other places as well. Again, subscribe, rate, and review. Rate and review. $2, $4, or $6. We got all that nailed. But otherwise, I think we're good to get out of this episode. So I'm Patrick.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Patrick.
Peace out.
Adios.
Hold on to Luke's butts.